Okay, let's go down to Las Vegas. When you have nothing else to do and there's nothing left, go to Las Vegas. Right? Hello, John.
I must tell you, Jeff, I just hate that music. It's like the Genghis Khan hordes are coming over the mountains. It's so scary. Anyway, I'm so delighted to be talking to you, and so sorry I missed you last month, because that's the best time of the month for me when I am on with you, because you're the godfather of my book. I wouldn't have it if I didn't have you. And there definitely is so much for us to talk to us about today. So let us begin.
All right, let's jump in. If I think most of you had a chance to at least see some of the clips of Biden's, I call it a performance last night, his appearance may be more appropriate, but it was dreadful. It looked to me, John, at this point, like he was essentially politically euthanized on live TV. They sent him out there. They didn't shoot him up like they did for the State of the Union. You saw that. Go ahead.
No. Listen, I've got like five different segments and thoughts about what happened last night. But before we get to that, the first thing you have to ask me, because you helped save Sarita, is how Sarita is doing.
Oh, I wrote to you the other day and mentioned that, and I didn't get an answer, so and I didn't know if I should pursue it on the live radio, but please do tell.
Okay, I will tell you that a year ago, Sarita could have died. She could have been called the Elephant Woman. Her legs were that thick. Her shoes were size 12. She couldn't move. And she had these blood blisters on her left leg. And so I finally got her to the emergency. And the emergency nurse said, God, get her to a hospital. This lady could be dead in a week. So I got her to Valley Spring Hospital. They cured her in a week from the edema, but she couldn't move very well, so they were giving her therapy. And after they cured the edema, they moved her into a therapeutic exercise hospital, and she was there for over a week, and they would come in and exercise her. And she would say to me, honey, you know, if you could help me at home, I want to be at home. Could I do the exercise there? Now, never, ever, ever did I put on Facebook anything about my wife's very serious illness, because I never put anything deeply personal or painful about me or my wife on Facebook. That's not what I use it for. And one of the things that irritates me to no end is somebody will stub their toe or get a hangnail and put a picture of it, of them going to the hospital, and they start a GoFundMe account looking for help.
I deleted these people
immediately. People that show me what they're having for lunch, I delete it immediately. Right. I only use Facebook as work to bring Jim Garrison's films to the attention of America, world, and to my two books, one of which I wouldn't have without you, so you're the godfather of your mother's not a virgin. So anyway, a week and a half ago, I'm playing golf in the heat. It's like 105.
You're amazing.
You know how hot it is here?
Go ahead.
Ask me a straight line.
How hot is it there, Johnny?
It is so hot, Jehovah's Witnesses are emailing.
That's good. That's so another goodie. Yeah.
So ask me again.
John, seriously, how hot is it in Las Vegas?
It is so hot, chickens are laying fried eggs.
good. Okay, and Mormons have parked their bicycles. Don't forget that one.
Yeah, okay, so a week ago, when it was 103 here, there's a park that you probably know of, but it's a corner of Sunset and Green Valley Parkway that's quite large. And Donald Trump came to town to speak, and he filled that park. And when
that's a big park.
Yeah, and when he was finished, the hot air rose the temperature to 110. and for those of you who are interested in finding out more about Donald Trump, there was a movie that premiered at the Cannes Film Festival 2 months ago about Trump called The Apprentice. And as a former critic, I must tell you, Jeff, I can't wait to miss it. Now, July 11th is when they're going to sentence him for his 34 crimes. So let me ask you, what do you think his sentence would be or should he get?
That's a question that requires one to first point to the machine that convicted him. Who are these people? What's their agenda? It's not a normal court. It's not a normal jurisprudence exercise.
Okay,
I would say
go ahead.
They're probably going to give him 25 to 35 years in aggregate.
You know what they should sentence him to? They should sentence him to 4 years of watching videotape of Biden as president.
Now, that's cruel and inhuman. I'm sorry. That's tough to wish on anybody.
Okay,
jeez.
So now I want to get back to Sarita for a second.
Yes.
When I was out playing golf with my son, one of my best friends here in his
I have to say, hi, Sarita. Hello, Sarita. Oh, I'm so glad you're
okay,
doing
well. Listen. What happened? I get home, and Sarita, because what I had to do with her when I got her home, of course, was get her up every morning, help clean her, take her to the restroom.
You're amazing. Yes. Yes.
And I just absolutely loved doing it, because without her, there would have never been any real people. There would have never been anything in my life. I would have never had this magical son, which I want to get to also. So, right. And anyway, I come home, and what I would do when I would go out for 4 hours, I would make a fantastic lunch. I'm a pretty good cook, and I would make a fantastic lunch for her to nibble on while it was gone. So I come home, and she's sitting up with the biggest smile on her face. And I said, what is it? What's that smile all about? She said, Angel, I didn't want to call and interrupt your game, but I got up and got to the bathroom myself. And ever since then, now that's a week and a half, she's doing everything by herself. And one of the things that helped her the most was that wonderful liquid ointment that you sent her, because when the last nurse came to the house and she saw it, she got all excited, put it on Sarita's legs. Now, guess what? Sarita's leg. Sarita was a tap dancer the equal of Eleanor Powell or Ginger Rogers. Her legs are down to her 25-year-old legs, and her feet with a beautiful high arch are size 5.5.
This is really great. This is wonderful. John is mentioning Alloderm, which is the brother or the twin to Allison C. capsules. Alloderm is a liquid in a little tube, and it can be miraculous. Go ahead, please. This is great.
Well, she said, when you talk to Jeff tonight, you have to do two things. The first thing, you have to thank him from the bottom of my heart for his interest in me and sending me that message. And the other thing you have to do is let him talk.
Oh, no, I have more fun listening than most people do.
So, since I mentioned the sun, could I read a little thing about the sun? Because I want to get absolutely, before we get to the dark side of the moon, which is Trump and Biden and the debate last
night. No, please read about Christopher. Yes.
Because what I have to tell you is so bloody smart, if I do say so myself. But anyway, about a week and a half ago, you know, I'm a hockey junkie, and myself and John Perry, who's Matthew Perry's father, and Bo Swenson, the first actor in Walking Tall, we started the celebrity hockey team. So I'm still a hockey junkie. And, I, of course, the Stanley Cups were playing. And the seventh game was in Florida. And Florida just lost three in a row. But I was hoping that Florida would win because it would bring something to the hundreds and hundreds of people who lost everything in those floods down there. And they won in one of the most exciting games in history. They won 2-1. Anyway, while I was waiting for the game, I never do this, I went outside to sit in 105-degree heat. Mm-hmm. And when I got inside, this is what I wrote. Can I read it to you?
Of course. Please.
How I just met the sun. No matter the temperature, there is certainly something about the sun that is magically healing. Although 105 here, I went to my yard, reclined in a deck chair, staring closed eyes above, and oh, what a wondrous, wondrous feeling. I went there at sunset to await watching a hockey game, also with world-weary thoughts absolutely cluttering my mind. Mm-hmm. Almost instantly, this life-giving orb wrapped its last chance warm arms about me better than any lover. And in a minute, not one thought could I find. My desire to see the game was also gone. It was just me and the universe, seeing clearly that only life mattered, even though I was blind. I love the outdoors, play golf a lot, yet this is the first time I've ever had a heart-to-heat talk with the sun, which I find odd. But now I know why. The ancients called it a god.
Well, there said. That's a cosmic encounter that very few people really... The sun is taken for granted. Let's be honest.
Yes.
It's always there.
Yes, it is.
People don't pay
it
attention to it.
No, they do not. I do not. Now, what I want to get to is I want to get to the business of the debate last night that I really didn't want to watch because I'm not going to vote, so I wouldn't even bother watching it. But I thought it was my responsibility to do so, and I hadn't slept for 2 days, so I needed something to make me tired. Anyway, it's like five parts, and I am so proud of some of what I said, and I hope you would enjoy it. I'm going to say this first off. As I've said 100 times, I never give advice except maybe once in a while when privately requested. And I never post opinion. I keep those only to myself. What I'm about to say now, though, may sound like opinion. It is not. It is fact. No matter what you think of Joe Biden, and I don't think much of him mostly because of his support of war criminal Netanyahu and the disgrace of his inviting this child killer to speak to Congress in a couple of weeks. But he is the President of the United States. As such, if he had any brains and balls, he would never allow himself to debate a convicted criminal such as Trump, no matter how much support Trump may have with the public. By doing so, he elevates Trump to an ill-deserved status of being considered presidential material when he has proven for 4 years he is not. Trump only got into office because Hillary was a god-awful choice. Satanic. Trump was and is a god-awful choice. Our choices have gotten worse and worse every year since they murdered the best, John Kennedy. If I were going to vote in November, which I definitely am not, I would take a penny, because both are only worth that. Toss it in the air, say heads for Biden, tails for Trump, and hope that the coin never hits the ground. We have as much chance in the next 34 years of getting another John Kennedy as that coin has on landing on its edge.
That's a good mental image for sure. And you're right. You're 100% correct in everything you said. It's grim. Well, greatness is gone from America. We don't have it.
Oh, God. You know, you and I talked about the golden years that you and I have, you know, lived through. And, you know,
very blessed to have lived through and seen.
Yes, absolutely. So now, I want to talk about, Sarita insisted that I sit and watch this with her. So here, let's see if I can get this. So I did. Oh, God. Here it is here. Oh, God, thank God for Sarita. She's such a joy. And you. I was having a lot of trouble sleeping the last couple of nights.
Yeah.
So to make it easier tonight, I figured I'd tune in and watch the debate between Trump and Biden. It worked. After an hour, I started to doze off.
Uh-huh.
Then I looked at my watch and saw I'd only been watching for 15 minutes. Democrats must be very disappointed and scared shitless. It's not as though Biden made Trump look better. Not even a heart or brain transplant could make Trump look better. Trump is a totally self-absorbed, egomaniacal sociopath. In the first 10 minutes, I ran out of fingers counting his lies. Biden himself looked worse. His advisors should have stuck some Energizer Bunny batteries in his jockey shorts next to his balls. He gradually melted away like the Wicked Witch in The Wizard of Oz.
That's another good analogy. Yes.
Who won the debate? I don't know. I just know that America lost.
We all lost. It was a perfect mirrored reflection of how far down into the hole of nothingness this whole political system has gone.
It's tragic. It's terrible. I have my niece, who is very successful in Colorado, who voted for Trump, who is now not going to vote at all again. She said, okay, so here it is here. Here it is here. In what my adorable niece Catherine said, once a Trump supporter, was what a shit show debate. The female anchor asked Trump 3 times if he would abide this time by the outcome of the November elections. 3 times he avoided the question. This means if he loses again, for another 4 years, he'll be running around howling they did it to him again, dividing and boring the country. That is, if he lives that long, or they haven't dragged him off to some prison or a loony bin where, like Salieri in the movie Amadeus, they can push him around in a wheelchair screaming at the other patients to his empty heart's content, I am the President of the United States.
That's funny.
It is funny. And you
she
know
wrote
why?
That. That's very funny. Huh? It's good. That's very good. Very
well,
good.
Listen, you know, you know, I never get sick, Jeff. And I never get sick because, listen, I'm almost, I don't know how old you are, but I'm sure I'm 30 or
39.
Yeah, like Jack Benny. But there's no question about it that laughter is the best medicine. Or if you can't laugh, if you're working at something you love, you will never get sick. You know, Mae Brussels, I've often bragged about being the absolute best researcher in the world. You know, Mae Brussels had five children. One of her daughters was murdered by the CIA. No. The CIA bought a house next door to harass her for years. She ended up divorcing her husband because her husband was getting tired of her doing this stuff. She moved up by herself to Carmel to pursue her love.
Yeah.
The greatest speech I have ever seen about good health she gave to a woman's class. She never gets a toothache. She never gets a stomachache. She never goes to the doctors because she loves what it is she's doing. And I love what it is I'm doing. So now...
There's a big lesson in John. Excuse me. There's a big lesson in what John is relaying here. He's right on the money. You want to stay healthy, wealthy, happy, and wise? Maybe not wealthy. Find whatever it is you can do that you love to do and do it to the best of your ability. And that is success. And you will be happy. And you won't be sick. That's the secret. You're right, John. Go ahead.
Okay, so now, of course, I have to say, this is my last word on the debate. Here is my last word on the last debate, which may be a little encouragement to desperately disappointed Democrats. Biden is like the weather. In the first debate, it was dull and overcast. But like the weather, he can improve for the next one. As for Trump, though, who was caught in the quicksand of lies, he cannot improve. He is pathetically what he is, a lousy businessman, an adulterer, and a convicted criminal who can only sink deeper. So that means I will not be watching the second debate at all. I will just...
That reminds me of the W.C. Fields movie. It's a Gift, I think it was, when he moved to California.
Yes.
He was drunk, and there was some rich swindler there trying to short him on money. And when he wanted to sell something because it was going to make a profit. So Fields was. And he was drunk. And the guy said, "You're drunk." And Fields said, "Yes, I'm drunk, but I'll be sober tomorrow, and you'll be crazy for the rest of your life."
Oh, my God.
That's Trump. So... You just described it. Trump is what you see is what you get, and that's all there is. There ain't no more.
Yeah, there were a couple of sad things that sort of happened. You know, Donald Sutherland passed away.
Yeah.
Really, really talented Canadian actor who never became an American citizen. And I just had this brief comment about Donald. Donald Sutherland, who sadly died today, absolutely loved acting and loved golf. Like Sean Connery and like Connery, dressed on the golf course like a caddy. In the late 60s, I had the accidental pleasure of being paired up with him as a twosome on Woodley, a public course in the San Fernando Valley.
Oh, how nice.
He also loved to chat, and like George Burns, talk and tell stories. And what a storyteller. It was here I shot my lowest score ever, 66, six under par. He was stunned at how well I played golf. I told him the reason I played so well is that I was so distracted by playing with him and listening to his fantastic stories, I forgot I was playing golf, because when I think about playing golf, I play like shit. The loud laugh and engaging smile are still with me, and the scorecard is in my office wall.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Golf is a treacherous game. It's a trap, a psychological trap. I don't know how people do it.
Well,
that's 66, John? That's astonishing.
Yeah, well, you know, the worst thing is it's like Hamlet. It forces you to think. And the worst thing you can do when you try to do something is think. If you can't do
it automatically,
you are done. I mean, totally done. And the other
Got you into a Julius Boros mindset where you just went up and hit the damn ball. You didn't think about it.
That's exactly right. And, oh, my God, I still, if I'm not physically active, I went out twice this week with one of my best friends in town and his grandson. Let me tell you about how his grandson, Ethan, happened to sort of fall in love with playing with Superman.
Right.
His father is the top manager of one of the big hotels in town. Major, major star in the gambling business. And has sometimes a disrupted family. And so he has to take care of his grandson, Ethan. The grandfather is Greek, and Ethan is a Greek name. Anyway, 2 years ago, when he was 11, my friend's name is Tommy. He says, "Can I bring Ethan out to play golf with us?" And I said, "Absolutely." He said, "Well, he can't play that well." I said, "I don't care. I love any kid who plays golf. You know, the greatest, happiest days of my life was I was taking my son to junior golf tournaments, and I would sneak out on the course, and they'd come and arrest me for being on a private course. And my dream was, even when I was making $30,000 a show with real people, was to retire and caddy for my son on the tour. That actually was my dream," I said, "to bring him along." Well, Tommy said to me, "Well, you know, my boy is verbally challenged." And I said, "What do you mean verbally challenged?" He said, "Well, you know, he's at the bottom of his class in school. He doesn't like to be around people because he can't talk very well." And I said, "Well, that's all the more reason to bring him out." And I said, "And put him in the cart with me." And he said, "Well, you know, you have these outbursts. If you have a bad shot, you have a tendency to curse." And I said, "Well, absolutely." I said, "I think cursing is really valuable when you're playing golf or having sex." So anyway, the boy got in my cart, and of course I missed a few shots, and boy, I filled the air with expletives. I mean, really bad. And he started to laugh. And I started to talk to the boy. And we talked and talked and never played golf. And he was as verbal as anyone. So I said to Tommy, I said, "My God, you got to get the kid out of that class, wherever he is, and put him in another class." So Tommy, since he has the money, spent $25,000, put him in another class. This last year, Ethan is now at 13, the number one A student in his class. Huh. And as a reward, he got a gift a week and a half ago to go to Rome to see the Sistine Chapel, and then to Greece where his ancestors were born, and then to the Parthenon. And all he kept saying when he was phoning his father, "Papa, Papu," he calls him, "when I get back, can we go play with Superman again?" So he's been back a week and a half, and we played twice since he get back. And
You always do nice things, John. This is great.
Well, you know, I never did that until I accidentally had a son of my own, thanks to Sarita. And you know, it was Father's Day this month. So again, just because I love my son so much, and it was such a joy. It doesn't sound right in prose, and that's why I've been ending up writing a lot of rhyme lately. So could I read something about that?
Yeah, and please let me remind everyone that John has his own columnist section on the left-hand side of the homepage, and many of these things are there archived for you. So go and enjoy them when you have a few minutes. Onward.
Okay. To me, having just one day a year set aside to celebrate Father's Day is rather a sin. Because at 36, when I first held my unwanted, tiny, warm son in my arms, only then did my life truly begin. As an unwanted child myself, with brawling, drunken, non-present parents, I did not know what kind of father I'd be. I wanted only a shaky career. My wife, Sarita, wanted a child. I did that for her with magical changes in fortunes and me. Now I had to and wanted to live for only him and his mother. Getting me out of my mind on them every day was a total joy. Every day became Father's Day, and unexpected success came my way, so I could give more to my wife and Christopher, my boy. The more I gave to them, the more the gods gave to me. Of course, we're individuals, but as family, we are one. January 29th, 1969 was the day I became that reluctant father at 36. Now at 91, it seems that joy has just begun.
What a beautiful statement. There's something about how life changes when you become a parent. It just does. And if you're still a committed human being, you change. And I'll never forget the first time my daughter looked at me, and you know the same thing, when your child looks at you, focuses on you visually. He's looking at you, Christopher. I know you remember this.
Oh, yes.
And recognizing you as father and smiles at you. Well, that happened to me. My daughter looked at me, and there was an instant bond, a connection. She was not very old, and she smiled. And I was never the same, fortunately. That changed everything. You know the feeling, and many of you listening know the feeling. It makes you a better, hopefully, person.
That's why I so enjoy being with Ethan. It's almost like being again with my son, only he's not. He's somebody else's son.
No, I get it. I get it.
But you know what? You know, all through my life, people have popped up accidentally, sometimes for a day, sometimes for a week, sometimes for a half a year. And then they're gone forever, and they make my day. And so I can tell you just this little tale, if you don't mind, about one day, 2 weeks ago. Is it okay?
Of course. Please. Okay. These are all treats. Everybody loves them. Yeah.
Okay. After a rather miserable morning, I went to Jersey Mike's on the Strip to get my No. 7 turkey sub. The best sandwich in the city. While I was waiting by the cashier and paying, a rather attractive, rather short woman with a very, very long, ugly scar covering her whole arm, but accompanied by two beautifully behaved, beautiful children, a boy and a girl around 12 or 13, just walked over to me and said, "Hello, how are you today?" I was so surprised, I said, "I'm not quite sure." She smiled a beautiful smile, saying, "Maybe I read your mind, and maybe you need somebody to talk to." I smiled, and I said, no, I don't need anyone to talk to. But if you had read my mind, you'd know. I was thinking, how could a beautiful young woman have such an ugly scar in her arm? and two beautiful young children. And she laughed a very magical laugh. She says, I have another beautiful 11-year-old at home. And the tattoo was a weak moment during COVID. I said, was the 11-year-old another weak moment during COVID? Her lovely laugh was even louder. God, are you always this funny and honest? I have 6 children altogether. The older 3 are out and in their 20s. I was stunned. Wow, I'll be honest this time, and I say you barely look out of your 20s yourself, she said very quickly. I had these 3 after colon cancer, and it seems having children keeps me young while my husband is prematurely gray in his early 40s, and I'm 52. Oh, I said, oh, my God, was all I could utter until I said, it seems semen is a greater cancer cure than chemotherapy.
Great line, yes.
Her infectious laughter now filled the store, bringing smiles to everyone's face, and all work stopped. And her children rushed over to hug her, smiling also at me. And she said, you know why I spoke to you? And I said, I'm not the mind reader. You are. I have no idea. When I was looking at your kind face, a face I had the feeling I'd seen before, God told me to say hello because you might cheer me up a little, which indeed I needed. And you did. God bless you. The children gathered up the large to-go order and took her mother by each hand. I said, ma'am, it was my pleasure, believe me. And as Clint Eastwood said in the movie Dirty Harry, you made my day. She smiled that engaging smile. We can't afford to go to the movies. As a matter of fact, the last one I saw was Superman. Maybe that's another reason I spoke to you. I don't understand why a grown man would wear a Superman sweater. But I must say, you are indeed a Superman. Thank you. Have a great day and a great life. The children even said a sweet goodbye. It amazes me how often a total stranger has popped up and made my day or even my life a lot better. Just absolutely amazing.
Some people, I think, have the ability to tune in and sense kindness, greatness, and other things, and they're attracted to it like a moth to a flame. And
that's
people
what,
will do that.
What? That's what Sarita has. Sarita, you could warm your hands just waving them around in front of Sarita because she's just so warm. Anyway, the other thing I wanted to do is because, you know, as a result of appearing on your show and the stuff that I post, I get a lot of requests from, and then people who want my book, thank God for that. They ask me about writing, and I've answered 2 or 3 of these things with these, you know, people. But it's so many of them, I just decided. So what I did, I actually put one up on Facebook, and I posted it about writing. So do you mind if I share this with you?
Not at all. You know, when I was a kid, very quickly, my father would write in the evenings. He worked at Douglas Aircraft as a public relations director for 17 years, but he would write what he called penny dreadfuls.
You remember.
And he would knock these things out. He'd sit at the table with his old manual typewriter pounding out these long novels. And they were, I guess, what we'd call now a little racy. But he would bang them out and get paid for them, you know, $500 a novel, whatever. and he had a big cigar in his mouth, and he said, writing is the loneliest profession. So go ahead.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. This is a brief or not so brief note to aspiring writers. I have sent a version of this to a half a dozen of my Facebook friends who asked me how I became a writer and how they could become one. But now, because of so many requests, I'm going to put it out as a post, since absolutely everyone in the world wants to be a writer. Oh, and this, one of the funniest things I ever saw to prove that, when I was at Channel 4 in Los Angeles in the 70s, is one of the local CBS newsmen took his camera, Jeff, yeah, and he walked out onto Sunset Boulevard, and guess what he asked everybody who walked by? Just walked up to them, and guess what he asked them?
I give up.
He said, "What's your script about?" And everyone.
Oh, funny.
Had a movie script. So everyone, absolutely indeed, wants to be a writer. And everybody does have a great life story to tell if told properly.
I agree.
First, you cannot learn to write. Either you can or you can't. So do not waste your time going to any classes or reading any books on how to write. But do read over and over and over again the books of great writers or great essayers or great critics.
Mm-hmm.
Dickens did not go to school to learn to write. Picasso did not go to school to learn to paint. Chopin never went to school to learn to play the piano. Sinatra never went to school to learn to sing. They were born with that talent, and especially the intense desire to express it. Talent, which indeed you may have, but not yet discovered. I had no idea I could write at all or even any desire until the age of 30. It was thrust on me at that age because I absolutely fell in love with Jack Parr, the greatest host of The Tonight Show. I just wanted to do that, become like him, a host of a talk show. But to be like him, I'd first have to learn how to be an opening stand-up comedy act. I got all the comedy albums, but I could not be like these individual geniuses, Lenny Bruce, Mort Saul, Shelley Berman, Jonathan Winters et al. So I went to the library and got all the joke books so I could steal the jokes. Most of them were dreadful. The few good ones everyone knew. And I thought, I'm going to do better than that, not knowing if I could. I was forced to try. And as if by magic, 5 great minutes just poured out of me. I had no idea where it came from or how I could do it. The next thing I had to do to be like Parr was screw my courage to the sticking point out of Macbeth, and find a club where I could test it. The club was the Horn. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
On Santa Monica Boulevard near the Pacific. I was hired instantly as the only comic to work that club with only singers, becoming the opening act for Jim Nabors. The rest, as they say, is history. I did become the host of a number of talk shows, but in show business, you spend more of your time out of the business. To get back into it, I had to continue to write to avoid unemployment and anonymity. I not only discovered I loved it, but the writing became my one and only best friend. I do not care how many wives you've had, or how many children you've had, or how many best friends you have, you are absolutely all alone as a writer, so you better learn to enjoy your own company. Because when you write, that is all you have.
You got
stop
it.
Thinking, get started, and good luck.
You got it. And when you first sat down and realized that writing was going to come out of you, you stumbled across something that not only you loved doing, but was there. It's that you can't learn it in class. You're right. You have it or you don't. It's communication. It's how you look at life. It's how you see the absurdities of life and contrast them. And in your case, you set them up as comedy. Go ahead.
Do you remember Harlan Ellison?
Yes, that you've told us some Harlan Ellison stories a couple of times, way long ago, though.
Yeah, okay. So Harlan Ellison, he was going to write the foreword to my book after he had his stroke. But sadly, he died, and the last performance he ever had was on a show I used to have on BBS Radio. Well, Harlan wanted to be a writer when he was in college. And because you mentioned these stories that your father used to write that were kind of naughty or crime stories or whatever. Anyway, yeah. He told in college, he told his writing professor that's the only one thing he wanted to be in life. And his professor literally said to him, Harlan, you better find something else to do because you just cannot write. Well, Harlan did what your father did. He kept writing, and then finally he sold a couple of these pulp crime magazines, story. And the first one was for $50. So he sent a copy of the canceled check to his professor. Now, all through his entire life, Harlan Ellison, every time he got a check for whatever it was he did, he sent a copy of it to his professor.
Oh, that's funny.
He is the guy that wrote The Terminator. And Paramount Pictures stole that, plagiarized that, and put that Nazi son, Schwarzenegger, into the movie, which helped make him a star. I'll be back. Okay?
Yeah.
So, now, Harlan is going to sue Paramount. And his wife and his manager and his publicist and an agent and everybody knew said, Harlan, this is Hollywood, for God's sake. You cannot sue Paramount because not only will you never work there, you'll never work anyplace else in this town in your life. A lot of people hear that. You're never going to work again in this town. And he said, they stole my work. So he sued him. And he won. Now, on Hollywood Boulevard at Doheny, there was this big record shop. And above it was the largest billboard in Los Angeles, which showed pictures of Presley and the Beatles and all the big stars. Harlan bought that for a month. And up on it, he put a sign that said, I beat the bastards. And then,
oh, too funny. That's just
and
fabulous.
Then he never stopped working for 2 and 3 times the amount of money that he got. And he sent a copy of the settlement check to his professor.
That's really funny.
So his wife sent back a note saying, I'm so sorry my husband died. So Harlan said, well, pin the fucking thing on his grave.
He did. Oh, too much.
Oh, my God.
That's really amazing. What a story.
Thank you.
You know, the big, that's a great story. What was that record store, that big, that wasn't Wallach's Music City, was it?
You know, it might have been called that, but it was the biggest record store I ever saw. It's like a Walmart.
That was Music City, and it was on, I think it was near Sunset and Vine, if I remember.
No, Sunset and Doheny.
Okay.
Even then, Sunset and Vine, there were no stores. I mean, You know, when I was shocked, I was 17 years of age and illegally in the country, and the first street I wanted to see was Hollywood Boulevard.
Yeah.
I almost cried when I saw it because it's just a dump. And if you think it was a dump then, in the 50s, there's only about one block of Hollywood Boulevard that is, you know, livable, and that's where they have the Chinese theater. Oh my God, it's a disaster. And between the last time Sarita and I were there, we stayed at the Universal.
John, we have to wrap up, my friend. We've run out of time.
Oh my God. Anyway, thank you. I will just say this. I am going to have, on July the 4th, I'm going to have the greatest YouTube up about July 4th, and it's called America's Epitaph. I will post it. I'll send it to you, Jim, and don't
Very
miss
good.
It.
Please
okay?
get one thing I want to mention. You made a point here that you shot a 66, your greatest round of golf, when you mentally got out of your own way. Think about it.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly get out of your own way.
Yep. Find it is what you want to do, what you love to do, and get the hell out of the way. All right. Go give that beautiful lady a hug for me, please, after this. I'm really happy about this. And thank you, John.
And I can't wait to be on with you again at the end of July, because then I'm going to play that YouTube for you. You're going to be knocked out by that. Thank you so much.
Okay,
Jeff.
Johnny. All righty.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, wonderful material, wonderful man, wonderful lady. Just really blessed to be able to have these kinds of people in your life. And they're in your life, too. You're out there listening. Thank you for being here. It's a weekend. Take care. Talk soon.